It's time for another edition of Dome and Domer.
Hello again, Irish fans. Welcome back to Dome and Domer, the oldest Notre Dame sports podcast on the planet. I'm your host, Mike Sullivan, and for the next 20 minutes, my fellow Domers, Mike Coffey and Mike Brammer, and I will talk about the upcoming game with Boise State, another first-time opponent for the Irish. And this week, of course, in Notre Dame Stadium, it's Irish wear green. We may not be experts, we're not part of the media, but we are passionate about the Fighting Irish. So let's take a look a third of the way through the season now. After four games, how do things stack up statistically for the Irish? And then we'll take a look at the upcoming opponent, Boise State, here. So let's start with the offense. The Irish look pretty dang good on offense. Total offense, we're 16th in the country. Pass efficiency offense, 8th in the country. Scoring offense, 11th in the country. So, guys, we got to feel pretty good about what we're seeing just on the offensive side of the ball a third of the way through the year. Mike Brammer, what do you think?
Yeah, that, and I think just coupled with Carr's ability to continue to progress, it's if he keeps on that trajectory, they're going to be really damn good. So, so far, I like what I've seen. This is the second game in a row we haven't punted the football. I can't remember the last time that's happened, but that's two games back-to-back with no punts. And so now some of that was going forward on fourth down, but the reality of the matter is that's how efficient they've been, and that's crazy good.
Mike Coffey, pleased with the offensive performance so far?
No doubt, and I think it's also the lack of punts is also a factor of the kind of confidence that Marcus Freeman has in this offense, where if they're on the other side of the 50, it might be even close to the 50, he can say, you know, we can probably get this. And he's more willing to take a chance. I mean, plus the fact that we all know he does have a tendency to really push the envelope and whatnot. But I think, as Brammer said, I think you get a dose of improvement every week from CJ Carr. And I think I read that his quarterback rating is like number two overall or something like that. It's just something absolutely ridiculous. And coupled with the quality we have on our running back roster, I mean, that not only are we seeing something fantastic for this season, but things look bright for the next year or two, given the roster that we have.
So those are the areas where we're truly outstanding. Again, as a team, we're very low in terms of penalties per game and penalty yards. These are some areas that have really been outstanding. Some areas where we're sort of in the middle 50% of the country and need to get a little bit better. Our rush offense, which we love our backs, we love our offensive line, but the reality is our rushing yards per game is only 59th in the country. So it's, you know, in that middle 50% above average, we need to get better there. Defensively, no superlatives, and that's no surprise to people. Rushing defense, above average, 48th in the country. Got to get better there. Total defense, you know, here's some areas where we're below average. I think we all know. Total D, scoring D, we're 98th in the country in scoring defense. Pass efficiency defense, getting better, 79th in the country. Another area where the team is not bad, but we'd like to see it better. That's turnover margin, where we're only 51st. And these are really important statistics that great championship caliber teams always excel at. Now, here's some glaring weaknesses. Again, not a surprise, they're on the defensive side of things. Tackles for loss, we're only 131st. That's almost at the bottom, 134 teams in Division I football. Sacks, only 92. So that havoc rate, that disruption that we want to see, not so good. And I think the sack total plays into why pass efficiency defense still is lingering at below average. Again, thoughts on the defense? We know we saw some good signs, but statistically overall, not so good. Mike Brammer.
I think it's we're going to see like a few games from now, but part of it might be those first two games just took us a while to get going. Guys still feeling out their positions. Ash still trying to get comfortable what he's confident calling. I mean, a lot of this stuff comes into play, and we're not going to really know for a few more games yet if we're on a trajectory where the defense is also getting better. I mean, there certainly were signs of it Saturday. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what we kind of morph into. Maybe we do go, once he's healthy again, with Leonard Moore. Maybe we just put him on the best receiver on the other team, and we just lock man-to-man on that guy, and he's going to follow him wherever he goes. I don't know. I mean, that's certainly a possibility. It'll be interesting to see how this all shakes out, but I do think the defense is getting better. Probably the defensive line for me is the big question mark. That has got to get better quickly. Otherwise, it's going to be a long season.
Well, we'll talk about
you need that pressure.
We'll talk about a few of the things Freeman addressed in the press conference relative to your comments there in just a few minutes, Bram. Mike Coffey, anything about the defense that you want to say that you haven't said yet this year?
Well, I think part of it is I get the feeling that Chris Ash, just in general, has less of an aggressive scheme than Al Golden did. I mean, Al Golden's scheme was built on pressure, havoc, and just forcing opposing offenses into quick decisions, which more often than not are bad decisions. I think Chris Ash is, at least so far, has shown a little bit more a desire to take things a little slower. Now, having said that, I think if we continue to see the trends improve, that certainly will be a plus. We're certainly seeing a little bit more blitzing, a little bit more pressure. If we can make our opponents more one-dimensional, especially if we're not facing dual-threat quarterbacks, that's certainly going to make the job easier. And I would expect to see an improvement in tackles for loss and havoc rate and stuff like that if that proves to be the case.
Yeah, it's interesting. No question, we've blitzed less, right? That's true through four games. Is that because of a philosophical approach, or is it because we've had some younger guys and less experienced guys, and so in the interest of not exposing them, we aren't? But that comes at a price as well. And so if you're bringing four, you got to cover longer. And so those are, we haven't quite got that combination right, although we've, the last six quarters, maybe seen some signs for hope there. Now, the defensive stats are often an indication of the quality of the team you're playing. And once again this week, we're going to match up against a top 10 team in total offense. Boise State comes in ninth in total offense. Arkansas last week was eighth in total offense. You could argue Boise State's competition maybe hasn't been as tough as Arkansas's was, but, you know, relatively comparable. So Boise State ninth overall, 20th in rushing offense, 22nd in scoring. So this is going to be a challenge for our defense once again. Boise State's defense, not Arkansas bad, 56th in total defense, 81st in rushing defense, and that's got to give us a salivating a little bit when you think about our rushing attack with our line and our running backs. They're 75th in scoring defense. Again, we should match up well there, and maybe this shapes up to be another high-scoring game. Here's an interesting note. They're not great on defense, but they're 37th in pass efficiency defense, largely due to the amount of pressure they bring. They blitz a lot, and they're 28th in sacks. So that's something to keep an eye on as we head into Saturday. Okay, so Freeman's press conference, of course, on Monday. You know, I was overhearing some other folks in town talking about the game, and I was on the golf course yesterday, and I heard some guys next to me on the driving range who were saying, oh, well, Freeman obviously took over the defense. Marcus Freeman took over the defense. And I thought that was an interesting take on the improved performance. No indication that Marcus Freeman, he said he was not going to. I clearly don't think he did. Chris Ash is calling the defense. But I do think that Freeman has, if you want to say, taken over. He's exercised the right things as the head coach. He is inserting himself in the right ways as the head coach. And again, he talked about this again today in his press conference. You know, he's saying, hey, here's what a leader should do in tough times. Let's focus on what we do well. Let's really lean into accountability, and let's make sure we are in a competitive environment so the guys are earning, you know, the opportunity to play. And I think that's what we're seeing. The improvement has a lot to do with that focus on accountability. What are the coaches willing to tolerate? What are they accepting at practice? And I think that's where Freeman has inserted himself. Bram, you listened to the press conference. What was your sense of that?
Yeah, I heard the same thing. What would be interesting, and we don't know this, but I would not be surprised if I were to find out that Freeman walked over to the defense side of practice for a little bit and maybe chirped in on a couple of the drills that they run. Maybe he's doing, I think every head coach does that at some point. So I could certainly see that. I certainly don't think he took over the play calling. That's just ridiculous. There would have been all kind of indicators of that if that were really
the case.
No,
that didn't happen. We know that. That didn't happen.
So, at the end of the day, it's his program. It's his football team. He's the head coach. He's the one that's ultimately the buck stops with him. So as a head football coach, if he's got concerns on the defensive side, well, then you better do something about it. And maybe it's just overall level of attention to detail that he felt like could have played in. Now, the one thing he did mention in the press conference I thought was kind of interesting was that there was some simplicity. There was, maybe a cover two that didn't have four options. Maybe the cover two had two options. And they were simplifying things so that guys didn't need to overanalyze pre-snap. And maybe that was an indicator. That could very well be. Who knows? But he did mention that.
I think you're right. Yeah. So, again, focusing on what we do well. Okay, if this player, maybe he's better at this technique than that technique within our overall scheme. Great. So let's not give him the choices. Let's simplify it. And Freeman alluded to that. And I think we're seeing some evidence that that's helping, particularly with the improvement and development of our young guys. Coffey, coach talked about that very thing. Some of those young defensive backs are getting better just because they're out there longer.
No, absolutely. I think we're seeing Golden's playing very, very well. I think Tay Johnson's playing very, very well. These guys who are new to the program certainly are making contributions. There's a part of me that wonders, some of the older guys, you bring a new coordinator in, and as much as they pledge, oh, we're not going to change anything, they're going to change some stuff. So for the older guys who are steeped in the program and steeped in Al Golden's defense, there's a time of unlearning, shall we say, whereas a lot of these young guys, they don't have anything to unlearn. They're being exposed to the system as they get into it. Maybe they're not rethinking as much because they're not translating in their head, okay, what was this last year? And the further we get into the season, the easier it should be for the older guys as they get more immersed in what the current system is. And I'm not trying to put that forward as an excuse or anything. I'm just saying there's a natural change to when a new coordinator comes in. We can like or dislike what the philosophy is, but regardless, it may take a little bit to learn. And to Brammer's point, I think one thing we're seeing a lot less of in the last 2 weeks or so is not a lot of guys looking at each other and what? Hey, there's a lot less confusion, which I think lends itself to the theory that things have been simplified. And I think if it leads to the good results we want, I don't care if it's complex or simple, as long as it works.
For sure. And I think the unlearning, you look at a couple guys in the secondary who are veteran guys, transfers from Virginia Tech or Alabama, and they've got to unlearn that system, translate it in their mind to what we're asking them to do, and maybe learn different things as well. So all of that, it's not just freshmen that are playing that are new, but even seasoned guys who are out of the transfer portal have to fit in and learn. And all of that, how I teach my philosophy or my techniques, how I teach it so you understand it, right? Those are the things that take time. Mm-hmm. And again, we're all hopeful that we're seeing real improvement and that's going to continue. On the offensive side of things, consistent execution, I think, is the thing that he's harping on. And even though great performance, there's always things to get better, always things to learn, always things to improve upon. And, so he touched upon that as well. But the challenge of growing and getting better in good times, right? The contrast between, when things are going bad, there's a different motivation than I got to get better when things are going good. And that's the role of the head coach, right? Keeping everybody accountable for improvement. Okay, last topic on the press conference, some depth chart updates. Everybody's focused on Leonard Moore, and he's still questionable, nursing that ankle sprain, and, you know, may not play. But, you know, we lost Donovan Heinisch pregame on Saturday at Arkansas. He only played 5 snaps. And so Heinisch is questionable, and that bothers me maybe more than Leonard Moore's absence, because Boise State's ability to run the ball and their desire to run the ball and, you know, having a disruptor like Donovan Heinisch full strength, I think, is going to be important. So we have to keep an eye on that. Okay, lastly today, now that we got back to 500 and we see a path forward, we're all hoping and talking about let's run the table 10-2. Let's have a little conversation around the college football playoffs and what 10-2 might mean for the Irish. 12 teams have to get in, right? So let's start with this. Bram, how many Big Ten teams would you take right now if you're picking the field? How many Big Ten teams?
I mean, if it's right now today, you pretty much got to go with 4. I think there's 4 in there. If it's right now today, now hopefully chaos ensues. That's what we want.
Well, but, yeah. So let's play out. They got 4 last year, and it's hard to imagine them
probably
not
likely.
Four this year.
There's going to be 4 again.
Yeah. Coffee. What about the SEC? What's your number in the SEC?
That's going to be a hard number. I think Alabama came back from nowhere practically to beat Georgia this week. I would say right now, if it was today, you'd probably be looking at 5, but I think that number is going to go down just because there's so many teams that are going to, I'm not sure any of those teams can be consistently good, because that's really the theme for this year. You look across college football and there's no team that you really look at and say, wow, they are going to be absolute world beaters when the playoffs come around. So
let me tweak the question a little bit. As of today, are you going to take 3 or 4 SEC teams? What do you think it's going to be, 3 or 4? I guess that's really what I'm asking you.
As of today, I would probably say 4.
Right. Last year, they only got 3, right? Okay, no. So right there, 4 Big Ten, 4 SEC, 1 group of 5. All right, now we're starting to get to it. That's 9 out of the 12. If there's a spot for ND at 10-2, to me, it comes down to this. I mean, I totally believe the SEC and the Big Ten are each getting 4, right? It comes down to this for me. The ACC and the Big 12 each need to just get 1 team. If there's a second ACC team after Miami that makes it, or the Big 12 runner-up, I think we're in trouble, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that's where our rooting interest, and as you're kind of reading the tea leaves here, that's what we got to keep an eye on. I can't see a scenario that the Big 10 and the SEC don't each get 4. You cannot have a second ACC, or you cannot have a second Big 12 if the Big 10 and the SEC each get 4. It gets really tight at that point.
Yeah, it's probably unlikely. I think the unlikely scenario is the second ACC team. However, you never know. I mean, if Florida State wins out, look out. I don't know, though. It's a lot could still happen. There's a lot of football still left to play. But if you were to do the eye test today, I definitely think you're leaning towards 4-4 out of the Big Ten and SEC. And then after that, that's where things really tighten up. It's going to get interesting for sure.
If there's a second Big 12 or second ACC, it's going to get real tough for us.
No, absolutely. Because I think last year, Notre Dame's independence was a benefit to them, especially financially, because all that bowl money just came, or playoff money just came right to us. This might be the year that independence causes us problems, because with the way the schedule is set up, it was so front-loaded. I think if we were to play either of those two teams again within the next 2 or 3 weeks, and it had maybe softer teams to open up with, would we have had better luck in those games? Well, certainly possible, but having them right up front, those first two, that's going to be tough. But unfortunately, that's the price of independence. I mean, we don't have, looking at the schedule right now, it's unlikely we're going to see any more quality wins down the road to impress the committee. So that might be our downfall.
Well, that is totally what we're worried about here, right? USC takes a crap against Illinois, and that hurts us. This was a bad week for our schedule. Now, a lot of football to be played, and, you know, teams have to rise up and figure it out. I think it's the kind of situation where we might have a lot of 8-4, 7-5 teams, you know, other than Stanford, probably nobody really awful. But the opportunity for a marquee win, you know, our best win might end up being a loss. So those are things that we'll have to keep an eye on and hope for complete chaos in the ACC and Big 12. I think that's in our interest. Okay, we're going to wrap it up there. We'll be back on Thursday talking more about the matchup with Boise State. We'll make some predictions for the game and take a look at some key matchups around college football. All that will be Thursday's episode of Dome and Domer. Until then, for Mike Brammer and Mike Coffey, I'm Mike Sullivan. We'll see you next time.